From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Max Beacon works for the Wild Rivers Land Trust and is on the board of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts. Thanks for being here, Max.
Of course.
And I suppose in a little bit of connection history on the personal side, we should say that we've known each other. I've known you your entire life.
My entire life.
I love having this be the relationship and getting to see you here professionally. So thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
What is a land trust?
I'd say a land trust is a nonprofit that works to protect land. And it can take a lot of different forms, and most of the land trusts hold property in fee, like they own it outright, and a lot of land trusts also use conservation easements to protect land, which is you don't own the property, but you have an agreement with the landowner to protect the property in a certain way, and that carries on to future owners, and it's recorded on the deed. And let's say those are the two biggest tools land trusts use.
With a land trust, I suppose there's different ways of looking at it, but can you, if I have some land and I want it to be protected into the future, but I want to continue to live there, mm-hmm. is there a way to do that and have it be a land trust, and why would I?
There is a way to do that, yeah. An easement is a good situation, or a good tool for that situation. There's also other things like life estates where you can continue to use the property but donate it. Continue to use the property through your lifetime, but the title passes to a nonprofit. And I work with a lot of landowners who are not sure what's going to happen with their land when they pass away. Either their kids aren't interested in the property, or they don't have kids, and they just want to know that the property is going to be taken care of after they die. And they want to plan for that.
I'm assuming it has to be, there has to be a reason that the land trust wants it. So it's not like I'm living in suburban Portland and I've got a house and my kids don't want it and I don't really want to sell it, so I'm going to go to the land trust. It's more something related to the natural world. True?
Most land trusts, yeah, they're also, the world that I work in is mostly related to natural resource protection and, conservation of natural areas, wetlands, riparian habitats, wildlife habitat, things like that. There are land trusts that do historical preservation work. There are land trusts that protect farmland. There's land trusts that do all of these different things and more. So I'd say it really depends. But in the world I work in, yes, a house in a city is not a big conservation target. Although a land trust, I'm sure, would be happy to accept it as a donation, and they could sell it and use that money to fund a conservation project maybe. But yeah, as a conservation project, we're usually looking for larger properties that have some conservation benefit to them.
I know you specifically are on the Southern Oregon coast, and so therefore is the Wild Rivers Coalition or group land trust looking for something related to a specific river, to a specific area, or how do the land trusts kind of define their provenance?
At the land trust I work at, we've tried to narrow down the areas where we're proactively searching out projects to do by looking at a bunch of different data and putting it on maps that describe the most critical places for fish and wildlife habitat in our service area, which is the Southern Oregon coast. And we've come up with some areas, along rivers and in specific watersheds that are important for a lot of different reasons that we've called our opportunity areas. And a lot of land trusts go through a similar exercise. We work all over our service area, not just in those areas. So it depends on the organization, but that's how it works where I work at Wild Rivers Land Trust.
So if, for instance, someone called or tried to get hold of you and really where they were was closer to Roseburg or even closer to Eugene, mm-hmm. but they for some reason are interested in your organization, what do you do? Do you tell them to go, no, you need to go to Mackenzie River, or you need to go to Roseburg, or do you help them?
Your first part, yeah. We have partnerships with all of our land trusts across the state, and that's part of the benefit of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts, as we stay connected with our other land trusts in the state. So I recently got a few calls from the greater Roseburg area, and I just picked up the phone and called Mackenzie River and said, hey, would you talk to these folks and see if it's a potential project for you? And we just passed it off to them because that's more in their service area than ours.
What do the land trusts in the coalition, you talk, presumably you have commonality of interests or commonality of governance or commonality of issues that come up. Why is there a coalition of land trusts?
The coalition exists to, we like to use, what is the phrase we like to use all the time? To raise all the boats in the water. So there's a lot of land trusts that are doing great work in their individual service areas throughout the state. There's land trusts that work across the entire state of Oregon. And we also have associate members that are some mix of those things and or maybe just doing relevant work. But the idea is that by pooling all of our resources, we can advocate for the land trust community as a whole or provide services to the whole land trust community. And it's just way more efficient to work on some things together than it is independently.
So in the situation where I don't have children who are interested in my property and I have a house on the property and I'm going to live there, what are the restrictions in terms of developing it, for instance? Let's say I want to, my grandchildren are to come to visit and I need a little room, or I want to build a garden, or what, you know, how do those kind of rules work? Do I need to contact the land trust that now owns it and get permission? What are the steps?
I don't know every single land trust, but most of the ones that I've talked to have a template for what they use in a conservation easement. As far as terms, they're pretty flexible in most cases and what you can write into them. And it's a negotiation. It doesn't feel like a negotiation in some ways because we're both working to protect the property, but in some ways it is because we're talking about what are the terms the future owner is going to need to abide by. So we want to make sure that those are fitting the landowner's goals. If they want to build a house on the property, we want to make sure that it allows for that use in the future. If they want to continue gardening, or if they have some areas that they have pasture for animals they want to continue to use, we want to make sure that stuff is captured in the easement. Where the easements are not as flexible is after they're recorded. Then the terms are binding and the landowner has an obligation to abide by them, and the land trust has an obligation to enforce the terms of the easement. So we want to make sure we get it right before we get to recording. And if there's things like additional buildings or roads or trails, or we want to make sure all that stuff is considered.
It seems to me that I don't remember hearing about land trusts particularly when I was younger. But certainly in the last 20, 30 years, I've started hearing about land trusts. So is it a fairly new concept, or is it just kind of burgeoning, or what?
I think that this model of doing conservation work really took off on the East Coast. And this is, I've worked in this field only about 7 years now, so I'm new to it as well, and I'm learning. But my impression is that this really took off on the East Coast of the United States. Sure, someone got the idea from somewhere else, but as far as what I understand,
ideas always come from somewhere else.
exactly. But as far as in the United States, that's my impression. And on the West Coast, we're seeing new land trusts pop up often, which is great. And there's a lot of need and a lot of communities to serve, and so it's good to see that. I feel like we're on the upswing right now on seeing new projects pop up, and feel good about being in that moment right now in Oregon.
Why do we need land trusts?
That's a great question, Barbara. Maybe I'll talk a little bit about why. Just tell a little story about my background and why I got involved in land trusts, because I think it does tell a story about why we need land trusts. So I was a biologist. I mean, I guess I still am a biologist in some ways, but that was my education and my first several years in natural resources. I ended up feeling after several years like I was kind of documenting decline and not really doing much about it. So I got involved through some friends in advocating for a state forest on the South Coast called the Elliott State Forest. I was doing volunteer work with a group down there. And what we were trying to work on at that time was keeping the state forest from being sold to private ownership, because the Elliott State Forest is a wonderful place to go. It's 90,000 acres that's open to the public, and it provides a lot of benefits to a lot of different people. And we were facing the prospect of that access being cut off, of having gates put up and people could no longer go there. And the public would essentially have very little say after that in what happened with those forests and those rivers, etc. So that kind of got me interested in doing conservation work on private land. And I think that why we need land trust, this is all to say, I think that why we need land trust is so that communities can exercise some control over the lands that they depend on for water, for food, for wildlife habitat, things, lots of different things. But it's a way that communities can pool their resources to invest in the protection of land around their, where they are.
And this may be too broad a question, because I'm imagining that each land trust kind of makes this decision themselves. But I know, for instance, in the Mackenzie River Trust, there is a place called Green Island, and you can occasionally go there and you can see it, and there's an educational opportunity. But I imagine that there's other lands where they're like, no, you can't. I haven't had this conversation with them, but I'm assuming, no, you can't go there. What we're doing is making it a better habitat, and we don't want people tromping around. Is that kind of a normal paradigm, that a land trust might have some lands available that they would want people to see or to experience, but for the most part, no, it's not open to the public. It's not like we're creating a public park.
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's a value I haven't really touched on yet, because our land trust is small and we have kind of scattered ownership, and most of our ownership does not have good access. Either you have to walk across a river, or a neighbor just lets us use their access or something like that. And they're not really good places for the public to go. And that's something we would like to do, is get a property like Green Island that you mentioned, that's a really awesome place for the public to go. But recreation is huge in Oregon. People love recreating here. Land trusts, I looked up the statistic before we talked. We actually, land trusts in Oregon provide over 100,000 acres of public access. So it's a big opportunity, you know, for people to go see these places. But like you said, not every place is open to the public. Some places might be especially sensitive. There might be rare plants that are really sensitive to disturbance. There might be cultural resources on properties that are sensitive. Like I said about our properties, there might just not be good access or facilities on them for people. But yeah, the recreation part is a big piece of most land trust work.
Are there natural allies or organizations or people doing this group, people that you go to or helping you out to kind of spread the word and to do the job?
We work really closely with, at Wild Rivers Land Trust, just using our land trust as an example, we work really closely with the watershed councils in our service area. They're amazing groups that do a lot of great work in doing the actual on-the-ground restoration work. So they'll get grants to hire contractors that will come move logs into place to enhance the habitat for salmon in rivers, or reshape the way that rivers move to create better opportunities for salmon spawning or other species. And they have a long history in Oregon and a bunch of great planning work and a bunch of great assessments on what needs to happen where, and a great community ties. So we lean on them a lot of times to help us understand what lands and waters are important to work on, and to help us identify projects to work on. So at least where we're at, that's one of our major partners. But we try to work with as many people as we can, and I think that would probably be similar across most land trusts across the state.
If you have a piece of property in your trust, and then right next to it, it abuts on some property where there's someone who's not doing things that you think are particularly conservation worthy. And then next one, you know, there's, how do those relationships work with someone who has this trust and this land that they're working on or you're working on? And then next to it that's not happening that way. And how do you kind of develop that relationship, or you kind of hope that you get that eventually, and of course this could be a different answer based on the circumstance, but I wonder how that works, how you spread the word and kind of make it work.
I think when you're someone's neighbor, you just have a different relationship with them. And I guess it's not directly a land trust story because we didn't own this property, but it, with the city of Port Orford, the city has acquired several properties in their watershed to protect the watershed, to keep the forest there, because it's an amazing natural filter and water storage device just to have a forest on a piece of ground. It's a cool thing. And they had a neighbor that was a timber ownership, and they wanted to do a harvest. And one of the city volunteers for the city called up the timber company and just asked them, could you please leave a buffer on this creek? And they weren't required to do it, but they did it because of that relationship, because that person took the initiative to call them and ask for it and just say, you know, for the benefit of our community, could you please just leave a buffer on this little creek in your harvest? And it happened. So I think that that's, you know, an example of how people reaching out to each other and communicating can bring about a good thing. And it's not, you know, like I said, it's not a land trust example because that's not something that a land trust did, but that's a thing that is available to people when they become neighbors, I think.
How does the relationship of different land trusts work, not just with the Coalition of Oregon Land Trust, but in Washington or in Wyoming or in Tennessee? Is there a network of these conversations, or is it all so different based on where they are that there isn't as much commonality as you want?
A lot of our work is very, I don't know, I want to use the word wonky. It's like, it's rooted in the IRS tax code of what the definition of a conservation easement is according to the federal government. So there at that level, a lot of our work across the entire country is pretty similar in some ways. And we have a national alliance of land trusts called the Land Trust Alliance, and they host a conference every year. They host a lot of grant programs and training opportunities. So that's one way that we all get together and learn from each other and talk about emerging issues. There are also a lot of, you know, similar to the Coalition of Oregon Land Trust, there are many statewide coalitions across the country. There's one in Washington called the Washington Association of Land Trusts. And so I think that there's a lot of networking opportunities. I call up colleagues all the time across, you know, I've called up colleagues across the country and said, hey, I heard about this thing that your land trust is doing. Can you help me understand it? And I think that it's a community where people are dealing with similar issues and trying to find solutions and trying to work together. So it feels like we're pretty well connected and pretty well supporting each other.
Is there a kind of dream, either piece of property or land or idea that you have, like maybe we should be doing this or maybe we should try that, that would help us do our work? Or does it seem like it's pretty much?
Such a big question. Such a big question, Barbara. And my answer is just my opinion. I can't speak on behalf of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trust on this one or the Wild Rivers Land Trust, but I've seen some really inspiring projects recently that I think would really help to catalyze more and bigger projects across the country. And one of them is returning land to tribes. There's a lot of tribes that we work with in Oregon. There's 9 federally recognized tribes, and there's been some really amazing opportunities to transfer land back to the tribes. And the tribes have also been acquiring some property without land trust assistance, and that's been really great to see. And I'd love to see that work continue and get bigger in Oregon and elsewhere. Another one that I've seen that's been really inspiring to me is more of like a community farm type of model. There's the Lower Nehalem Community Trust runs a community farm on the North Coast where the land trust owns the land and helps to run the farm, and the food is raised by the volunteers and by the staff there from the farm and is distributed to the community. And I can't speak in any detail there because I'm not that familiar with that project. I've just heard about it and read about it and thought, wow, what a cool showcase of people getting together and having a really positive impact in their community. And so those are a few things that I've been inspired by lately. And Yeah, I'd love to see some more projects like those.
I don't know how you answer this question. Maybe this won't work. But is there kind of an anecdotal story or a moment or a person where you were really expecting an outcome or even expecting them to not know what you were talking about, and all of a sudden they're like, yeah, I love land trust. That's what, of course, I'm going to give you my land. Or some really kind of unusual way that somebody found you or gave you a piece of property that you really weren't expecting.
Yeah, maybe this is a good opportunity for me to talk about a project that the Wild Rivers Land Trust is working on for a minute. This is a little complicated. I'm going to try not to talk too long about it. But there's an old mill site on the Elk River called the Western States Plywood Mill. It was operated from the 50s to the late 60s. It went out of operation, later burned down. It was split into some parcels. The DEQ had a notice that there was some contamination on the property. We became interested, the Wild Rivers Land Trust, in the property because it has these old mill ponds on it, these old log ponds. So it's a neat wetland habitat. It's constructed, obviously, but it is a neat wetland. So we got interested in it. We started working towards trying to purchase it and realized that there was environmental contamination on the property. So we kind of had a discussion among our board, and at that time, and this was right before I came on at the Land Trust, but they decided that we weren't really well equipped to deal with that type of contamination, and we didn't see a clear pathway to owning the property. Just got really complicated, and then we had a donor who walked into our office and said, if I buy those properties, will you keep working on it? And they ended up, through several years of effort, buying the properties that contained the stream and the wetland we were interested in, and holding them so that we could work through that process to figure out how to test the properties, how to strategize on cleaning up the contamination and doing some restoration work. And we got some grants through the EPA, through Business Oregon. We worked with DEQ to do a lot of testing, and we just last year were awarded a $2 million cleanup grant from the EPA. And we're hoping to start doing the actual physical cleanup work next year. And so that was a situation where we thought there was no way forward, and someone who was passionate about what we were doing and the Elk River stepped in and just played this role where nobody else could have done that except for them. And we're, moving forward in a way we never thought we could because of it.
That's a heartwarming story, Max. What inspires you to keep doing this?
That's a good question. I think I'm inspired to keep doing this because I think I can see the benefits that it's bringing to people in my community. I think that's really the heart of it. I think people are inspired by this work. They feel like it's important, and I feel like it's important, but I don't know. Yeah. I've aside from my personal, beliefs that we're making the world a better place, I think I'm continue to be inspired because of how this work is received by the community and how people tell me that they appreciate it and that they see the difference that it's making. So I think that's what keeps me going.
Thank you, Max Beacon, for coming in and talking about land trusts and doing the work you're doing. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Barbara. Nice to talk with you.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.